Scott Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
Yo, what's happening, Rush Nation? We're back. It's Monday night. I feel like we've been on Monday nights for longer than Tuesday nights, Murph. Murph, I can't remember the last time we did a proper Tuesday night show in the studio. How you doing, man?
All good, brother. Yeah, it's been a long time. I mean, like, today is a strange day. It's the 1 year anniversary of the first lockdown. So obviously it's a sombering thought to think that we've been at home for a year.
Yeah.
We're in our third lockdown. We haven't been locked down for the entire time, for those of you listening in the US, but we've been locked down for about 75% of it. So it's been tough. It's a real surreal day, but as we've said previously, so you know, I've had my vaccine. I had mine a couple of weeks ago, so it gives you a real peace of mind knowing that that's in and done. So, and I know others will have theirs coming soon, so fingers crossed we get out of here the 21st of June and life can go back to normal, and hopefully by then we might be podding live somewhere. that's the hope.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't, you know, as much as I'm excited for that, I think we should hold fire maybe a smidge if vaccines tend to get, not tend, but if they start to become a little bit thin on the ground. I mean, at one point I thought we had like 395 million vaccines, so I'm not really sure how there's a shortage. But
I don't think it's not as much as it's a shortage in, it's we've got a huge amount on order. It's just the physical shipment of them coming in and out.
Like the current allowance, as it were, sort of thing.
So basically, you know, we only have X amount of room to store X amount of vaccine, right, in order for it to be potent and useful.
See, now this is where I disagree, Murph. This is where I disagree, because if you've ever been in a big yellow storage at any point except from the 21st of June, they're all freezing. So just whack them in there for a bit. We'll be fine.
Yeah, but they don't all need to be stored in... the Pfizer ones, for starters, have to be frozen. They have to be in like minus 70 degree temperatures. So this depends on which vaccine it is. I mean, that's why the Oxford AstraZeneca one is so groundbreaking, because it can be stored in the fridge. It doesn't have to be stored in. But I liked your reference to the Big Yellow. I once used a Big Yellow, so I know how cold it is there. And it was the one in Sutton as well.
Well, I mean, which one? There's many now.
The one by the Tesco's.
Oh, by the studio then?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's... We've gotten off topic. That is my local Big Yellow storage, if you if you know where I am.
It's always good to have a local Big Yellow storage, because, you know,
Do you think at this point in the world we live in currently, where storage and coffee shops rule the high street, do you think there isn't somebody with a local storage? Do you think there's somebody who is a fair journey from any form of storage right now in the UK?
Probably.
I don't know.
Especially those in Scotland.
Yeah, that's true.
Imagine living in the Highlands. You're not going to have a Big Yellow up there, are you?
I mean, to be fair, living in the Highlands, you've not got much of anything within a long, long way of each other.
No. It's like 30 miles to go and get a pint of milk.
Yeah. Or when there's a huge snowdrift and you get stuck into a pub in the middle of nowhere for a couple of weeks. Do you remember that?
No.
Yeah, there was a huge snowdrift one day, and there was a few people tucked into a pub sort of overnight at sort of local inn. And there was sort of 20-foot snowdrifts that piled across the entire bit of the area they were in, and they were stuck in the pub because they were so far from anyone for like 5 days.
Brilliant. No, not experienced that one personally, but I've been in the pub for 5 days straight, but not for as much fun as it sounds.
No, and no snowdrifts.
No snowdrifts.
Yeah, I don't fancy that myself.
I have had rioters and looters and robberies. Well, I'll be in the pub, but not no snowdrift.
Well, there's something you can tick off your bucket list. Maybe a snowdrift in a pub. That's worst things, I think. Right, Rush Nation. What is happening today? Well, Murph and I, we went through the quarterback's consistency a couple of weeks ago. We were supposed to do the tight ends on that show, but we didn't. So what we're doing is today, we're starting with tight end consistency, and then we're going to finish with running back consistency. And from what I've learned from Murph's information in front of me, which unfortunately you can't see because there is no live stream today.
It will be in the book.
Of course, it will be in the book, but we gave a sneak peek of the Cork quarterback one on the live stream. But seeing as this is now an audio only file today, only me and you can see it. And from what I can see, there's a lot of red on the board. And as you so regularly point out, Murph, tight ends don't really matter.
Yeah, and look, I don't think we need to spend too much time here, because last year the tight end position was just pretty much a wasteland. And I mean that with the utmost of respect. So only three players averaged over 10 points per game. And I'm being generous when I say over, because one was 10.08. basically, if you owned like one or two players, I mean, basically, look, the tight end position last year was Travis Kelce, Darren Waller, or bust. That was the tight end position last year. And we'll break down the numbers. And the reason I don't want to spend too long on it, because it's as I keep saying, tight end is just a position that, you know, we had the show a couple of years ago, didn't we? We had the great tight end debate. And I said, I just don't buy taking Travis Kelce so high, because I don't think you're getting a big advantage. Not so much about the position, just the points per game rationale of it. But he has continued to get better, so much so that he was, in his own right, a top 12 wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, if you think of Travis Kelce as a wide receiver and not a tight end, but then you're getting that positional advantage, but it's the points that he gets to go with it, then the logic is that he is worthy of that second round pick based on what he has done in the last couple of years. But no one else is worth that. For me, there's two guys that, if you're going to go tight end early, there's two guys worth drafting. There's one guy, maybe if he's around in the fourth or fifth, could be worth a steal, but I'm not overly confident. And then if not, I'm leaving the position, because it's just, there just isn't enough. And we'll get into the numbers and talk about it, but there just isn't enough here to warrant putting important draft capital into the position.
So
I've got a strategy point for the end of, once we've broken all this down, for what I would do with tight ends. I've kind of given a sneak preview and given it away there. But,
well, I think maybe rather than run through the numbers, because that could take perhaps longer than we should not give these guys credit for, but this should be something that if you really do want to see the numbers, you'll have to buy the book. You said there's three guys. Obviously, Travis Kelce is the dude you're going to be drafting early on. Just because of, at this point, he almost isn't a tight end like you alluded to. He is a wide receiver, and he played more snaps as a wide receiver than he did as a tight end lined up on the line of scrimmage for the Chiefs. So obviously, he's the guy you're taking number one. After him, who's next that you'll maybe consider early?
George Kittle. It's obviously difficult because of the injuries, and he holds an injury risk. George Kittle isn't on this list for obvious reasons, because he did not play enough games. But if George Kittle is available, we know what he has produced, and we know how Kyle Shanahan uses tight ends. You know, injury aside, I would feel pretty comfortable, you know, taking George Kittle as the second tight end off the board. I think there is that risk of injury. And I personally, so if this is talking about me, not the strategy of the position, probably would not put that investment in Kittle, because I'm pretty cautious in the opening rounds, and I don't like, and for me, Kittle just has a few too many injuries. I'm not saying he's injury prone. I'm just saying that for me, based on history of injuries, and I think injury prone gets banded about a bit too much. Mm. I just look at what he's done in the last couple of years, the amount of games he's played. And listen, I'm going to lose out on some players as a personal strategy, but if I wasn't baking any of that in, I would have no problem taking Kittle in the third to fourth round if I got the guys I was looking for early. It wouldn't personally be my strategy, but I wouldn't have a problem if someone went ahead and did that kind of thing. So those two guys for me are one and two. And there's a big gap between the two for me. But it's Kelce one gap. Kittle two. It's Kelce, then Kittle. And then there's another gap. And the only other tight end I'd be even remotely interested in is Darren Waller, based on what he did this year.
So with George Kittle, do you think we're, because of what we saw last year injury-wise, he's likely to fall a little bit further than...
No.
Or do you think people would just take him where they took him last year?
I think that the thinking and the misnomer is that people really want to get a positional advantage at tight end. And I can see the sort of logic, because it's a position in your lineup, and the guy in the tight end three position puts up 150, which is Robert Tonyan. So this is half point PPR points. So, you know, you're talking about 110 points, give or take the decimal points, was the difference between first and third. And you look at that and go, that is a massive positional advantage. And it absolutely is. But on the flip side, you know, you are giving up another position on your roster. And this is what people don't bake into. Now, because Kelce has been that good, you know, you'd effectively be giving up a wide receiver slot, but you're basically putting a wide receiver at a tight end.
Mm.
So it's not a big trade-off, and therefore the value is there. But people taking like a tight end in like the fifth round, say like Darren Waller's available in the fifth round, what you're giving up in exchange of that probably isn't worth the trade-off. And anyone after Darren Waller is absolutely not worth drafting. Not even Mark Andrews. They're just not worth drafting because they're all pretty much in a cluster with each other. So the gap from Robert Tonyan, who was third, to Noah Fant, who was 12th, was 32 points, which is 2 points a game. So spending capital and getting a tight end in the middle round isn't worth it. It's just not worth anything to you because you'll get a 2 point per game advantage. But what are you giving up to take a tight end there? You're giving up a wide receiver three, a running back three to get one of those guys, or an elite quarterback. And you're just going to lose the points. So my tight end strategy this year to recommend it to people is very simple. Either go big early and get Kelce or Kittle, or just ignore the position until the double-digit rounds. This middle tight end position just isn't worthwhile. So run through the numbers. So Travis Kelce, half-point PPR, 260 points. Darren Waller in second, 225 points. Actually played a game more than Kelce because Kelce sat week 17. Robert Tonyan was third. TJ Hockenson fourth, Mark Andrews fifth, all finished within nine, and Logan Thomas sixth, all finished within 6-10 points of each other, those four players. Two of those guys, Tonyan and Thomas, didn't even have an ADP, so they weren't ranked. TJ Hockenson was the 15th ranked tight end, and he finished fourth. Mark Andrews was third, and he finished fifth. But these guys, you've got Jimmy Graham, who finished as a tight end one. He was the 34th tight end off the board. It's like you just don't need to. If you invested in tight end last year in the middle rounds, you basically lost. You just lost the value on that pick. Now, here's some stats for you, right? So I'm taking Kelce out of this list. I've just gone to 18 tight ends. I didn't even bother to go beyond that because it was such a destitute position. From the tight ends 2 to 18... So take Kelce out. Every other tight end ranked between second, this includes Waller, and the 18th ranked tight end, which in this list was Tyler Higbee. So the tight end 2 to the tight end 18 busted an incredible 58% of the time. And they had an MVP week, which for the purposes of this data set, 13.6 points in half point PPR. So 13.6 points gave you a top 5 point total at the position. They only achieved that number just 17% of the time. And you think, well, those numbers are pretty bad. There's 262 games between them. So in those 262 games, they busted 58% of the time and they MVP'd just 17% of the time. In 2019, tight ends 2 to tight ends 18 actually busted at a higher rate. 62% of the time they busted and had an MVP rate of just 13%. But it was on less games. They only played 229 games. This is how much of a joke the position is. Dalton Schultz, right, who you got as when Blake Jarwin did his ACL.
Mm-hmm.
So Dalton Schultz was free. You got him off the waiver wire. He busted 75% of the time, and he was 3.3 point. So he busted 75% of the time. He did you absolutely no good in your lineup, and he points short of being a tight end one. So what you're looking for in a tight end is basically, can the tight end play 16 games? If you can find a tight end that plays 16 games, he's just as likely to be a tight end one as anyone.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a lottery. You just have to find, if you look at the guys who, you know, the guys who finished with 16 games. I mean, you got guys in here like Rob Gronkowski. He averaged 7.93 points a game. He busted 10 of his 16 games and he finished as the tight end 8. It's just ridiculous when you look at this number. This is why I say this about the tight end position. I love tight ends in real life, but it's just a pointless position for fantasy football because it doesn't offer anything. You know, you can stream this position. I need to look up where I finished in the PAS, but I think I was third. A difficult position to stream a top five, top six position just to get guys off the waiver wire every week. You know, don't draft tight ends in the middle of the round. That's if you take nothing else from this conversation over the next hour or however long we're going to go for, just don't draft tight ends in the middle rounds. Go very early or very late, double digit rounds plus, literally as a filler, just to get a guy. You know, in terms of the, you know, you had two tight ends that averaged the MVP points per game, which was Kelce and Waller, and two tight ends averaged production. So that's where they finished in that 13.5 to 9.2 range. And they were Mark Andrews and Robert Tonyan. And the rest, points per game wise, was a bust. So, like, there was only four players that finished above an average of 9 points per game, which is just like, when you're dealing with such small numbers, it doesn't matter. And, you know, to put this in perspective, so Robert Tonyan was the tight end 3. He, in half point PPR, he would have been, so he would have been a tight, he would have been a fourth, a wide receiver 4. The very top of the wide receiver 4, but he would have been the third best wide receiver. So if you take Robert Tonyan in the 5th round, thinking, well, he was the tight end 3 last year, so I'm going to take Robert Tonyan, you could have got better than the wide receiver 37 in that round, 100%. So you're just taking a player that you shouldn't be taking there. My favorite thing to back this up is Evan Ingram. So Evan Ingram last year was the tight end 18. He busted 62.5% of the time. His ADP was the tight end 7, and he was drafted 79th overall on average. So people were drafting him 79th overall as the tight end 7 off the board, and he busted 62.5% of the time, and he was the tight end 18. That's why you don't draft tight ends in the middle rounds. Get the elite early, or don't bother at all. Just get him very, very late for free.
Yeah. I think the thing that I've taken from this the most is if you take a tight end sort of round six to, like you say, the middle rounds, you're giving up a wide receiver 3, a running back 3, or an elite QB when the chance of a tight end you're taking at that point being the tight end 1 is 0, essentially, unless Travis Kelce gets injured. But the chance of that wide receiver or running back being a sneaky wide receiver 2 or running back 2, or, you know, we saw it with James Robinson, or these guys who were drafted later last year or picked up off the waivers were far more important than a mid-round tight end would be. So that just smacks home to me that you're giving up upside as well.
Again, and then go back to this year, 2020, tight ends 2 to 18, so that's the 17 of the top 18 tight ends busted 58% of the time. In 2019, they busted 62% of the time. So you are taking a valuable player in the middle round in very important draft capital that is likely to bust on average 60% of the time. Why would you do it? Like, it doesn't make any logical sense to take a player who is going to bust in your lineup 60% of the time with that higher capital with no upside.
Yeah.
That's my point. If you're going to take a guy in that range, you know, guys you could have got in that range last year, Keenan Allen, Brandon Cooks was going later. He was going in the 8th round. You know, Robert Woods was a 5th round player. Calvin Ridley was a 5th round player. You know, all these players in the 5th and 6th round last year, you could have got, or even the 7th round, you could have got Josh Allen. You could have got Russell Wilson, you could have got Kyler Murray in Dak Prescott. All those, I mean, Dak Prescott got injured, so probably not the best example, but he was on a record pace. But all those guys over like an Evan Ingram, just there's just no need. You just don't need to invest in the position at that round. Wait until, you know, if you take a tight end in the, what does it matter if they fail? It doesn't.
Yeah, I think
it doesn't matter. You're filling your bench at that stage.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of people wanting to fill, like you say, their starting roster with a tight end, and also other people taking a tight end, and people thinking, oh, well, a few tight ends are going here. I've missed out on the big guys, and now the middle round guys are going, so I'm going to be left with no one. When actually being left with no one is the same as drafting a middle round guy, but people are having a fear of missing out.
Yeah, and the truth of the matter is there's absolutely nothing to fear missing out on when it comes to tight ends. You know, the only person you're missing out on really truly is Travis Kelce. You're not missing out on anyone else. They don't matter. So don't invest. You know, if you go and get Travis Kelce, like if someone said to me that, like 2 years ago, I'm going to take Travis Kelce on the 1-2 turn, I'd have been absolutely mortified. Now I kind of get it, like he's so safe as a pick, and you're going to get top five wide receiver numbers out of him. I actually don't hate it anymore. Like right now, if you were taking Travis Kelce on the 1-2 turn, I wouldn't hate it. Like I think about what you can get on that 1-2 turn, and I think that is almost about as safe as pick as any is what you can get right now on the 1-2 turn. I don't hate that, which is mad for me. It shows my value. But he's the only player I would consider taking in the top five. In fact, he's the only tight end I'd consider taking in the top 10 rounds. Yeah. That's it. He's the only tight end I'd consider in the top 10 rounds. I wouldn't take any other tight end. I'd literally scratch the rest of the position for me.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair evaluation after looking at this data. I think what I've drawn from this, Murph, is that a couple of years ago when we had the tight end debate, I was a visionary. That's all I can say.
You did stick up for other guys, though. Ertz and...
No, I think you're remembering it wrong. I think you're...
yeah.
No, I think what's come of that is just how good at the position Travis Kelce actually is. Not only that, but how the Chiefs use him as a weapon when perhaps as the snap percent is shown, he's used more as a wide receiver. So he's an
outlier. Yeah, he's an outlier. Yeah. He's not the norm. He is an outlier to the rest of the position. So you have to either draft. I totally understand not wanting to draft him at all, but just punt the rest of the position. Just absolutely punt it. It's just no need to invest in tight end because it's not going to hurt your roster.
So one last thing on tight end before we move on to running backs, Murph. I know we've gone on a little bit already, but Florida Gator Kyle Pitts, generational talent at the tight end position. If he lands in the best possible landing spot for him, how good do you think he could be? And do you think he could maybe somewhat, you know, if he lands somewhere great and has a terrific year one, akin to almost what Travis Kelce's doing, would you consider taking him earlier than round 10? Or what I'm asking is, how good do you think Kyle Pitts is going to be if he lands in the best place possible?
I think Kyle Pitts could potentially be very good. I wouldn't be interested in investing in him year one at the cost of what other people are going to invest in. I think Kyle Pitts could realistically go in those middle rounds. And I just, you know, it's very difficult for a year one tight end. You know how high I was on Noah Fant.
Mm-hmm.
Best tight end prospects I've ever seen come out of college.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't take him in those middle rounds. Because it's not just about landing spot and talent. It's just the fact that tight end is a very difficult position to learn. It's not just running routes. Now, listen, Kyle Pitts could line up as a wide receiver and he could kind of paint egg on my face here by basically just lining up as a wide receiver and just get a load of points. And that could realistically happen. But there's nothing that's going to get me to draft Kyle Pitts in the opening. I mean, like maybe round 9, if he's sitting there, I'd probably consider it. But in those first 8 rounds, no, I just don't think, even if he lands in the best spot possible, because it just takes time for a player, especially at tight end, to acclimatize, and I'll let someone else take the risk. And listen, if it pays off, you know, fair play to them. I'm working on a strategy to build the best roster possible. And Kyle Pitts is an unknown quantity. And I think at some places I'd be willing to roll a rookie, but a tight end, nah. He could be the best prospect in history, and I still probably wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, we saw only a few years ago with Evan Engram that he had one of the best rookie tight end seasons of all time, and it still wasn't along anywhere near the lines of a George Kittle or no. Travis Kelce, even a Darren Waller or Mark Andrews season. So,
no.
I think I'm not going to have many shares of him because, like you say, in redraft leagues, he's going to go earlier than I'll be willing to pay for him. And then in Dynasty, I don't think I've got... I think he's going to go... You know, he could go within the top five picks, even in just a standard tight end league. And I think that's too high a price for me, considering most of the teams I have greater needs. And I think there's only one or two places where I might have a go at him in Dynasty, and that's purely because I've got either two or three first round picks, and I can afford to take that punt.
Yeah. So, yeah, makes sense.
Right, Murph, let's move on to running backs, the meat and veg of this episode, as it were. I've missed out potatoes there, and potatoes are a key for anything decent, really. But what I've garnered from this is the top sort of 6, 7, 8 players, even 9 with Nick Chubb coming in at 9 on this list. There's not a lot of red on the board. They didn't really have many bust games.
No. So let's just quickly break this down. So let's take these top 9, right, first of all. So they finish in order. Alvin Kamara, number 1. 13 points behind him was Derrick Henry at number 2. Dalvin Cook was number 3, but he actually had the highest points per game average. Dalvin Cook played 2 less games than Kamara, than Henry, and 1 less game than Kamara. David Montgomery was number 4. He was a massive drop. So those top 3 were within 21 points of each other. David Montgomery was 78 points behind Dalvin Cook from 3rd to 4th. And then you sort of have this middle tier. So David Montgomery, 237, Aaron Jones, 235, Jonathan Taylor, 234, James Robinson at 225, Josh Jacobs, 214, Nick Chubb, 199.7, but he only played 12 games. So he falls right into that group for me. So you kind of have two tiers here. So the elite, we've got to address the elephant in the room, first of all. The elephant in the room is that there's no Christian McCaffrey and there's no Saquon Barkley on this list due to injury. And they would have had a massive impact on how this data would have broken down. But they're not on here because they didn't. They missed, you know, McCaffrey played 2 or 3 games. Barkley, I think, played 2, maybe 1. And so as a result, you know, effectively 2 of the 3 best running backs for fantasy football, the guys that were being taken 1 and 2, essentially, in ADP, aren't in this data because they got injured. And that had a massive impact on the rest of the the rest of the running back position. What you did see here is actually fantasy players are pretty good talent evaluators, because Alvin Kamara was finished 1. He had an ADP of the 4th running back off the board. Derrick Henry was the 6th running back off the board. Dalvin Cook was the 5th running back on the board. So then when you readjust those numbers, they went off at 2, 3, and 4, and they finished 1, 2, and 3. So the evaluation process was right. The one that was off was after 5 games, and everything started to go off the rails because the offense wasn't efficient with Andy Dalton there. And he had the mid-season stretch that was about as bad as any elite running back could have. So he finished as the running back 11. But given what sort of happened with the quarterback position, you could make a case that Ezekiel Elliott's year was massively impacted by what happened at the quarterback position. But we're going to just put that in the box to one side. So what you've got here is this elite 3 at the moment of the data of Kamara, Henry, and Cook. They finished head and shoulders above everybody, rightfully so. These guys had high numbers of MVP games. Dalvin Cook actually had the most amount. He was an MVP in half of his games. And, you know, some of the interesting things. And listen, it's kind of a come to Jesus moment for me, because, you know, I've talked about Dalvin Cook I've made some sarky comments in the past that I wouldn't draft him, you know, in the top 7 rounds of a draft and all these sorts of things. Obviously, he has proven that he can remain healthy-ish for 2 games for 2 seasons in a row. He's played 14 games. And he pulled out some great performances against really good teams. If you take the top 10 defenses, he played five of them, and he got 24.4 points against the Bears, 15.5 points against the Saints, and he was pulled in that game, and Mattson was allowed to run free. He had 13.2 points against Chicago, and he had 16.1 points against Indianapolis. So they were all like top defenses, and he performed in all of those. He only busted the once. Now, he obviously were, you know, the problem that you have with Dalvin Cook is injury. That's the only thing that kind of puts you off. But he's played those games. It's just at the end of the season, his production drops off, whether that's injury or he's missed time. You know, 2 years ago, he missed the fantasy playoffs. Last season, he sort of played, but he was hurt in the fantasy playoffs. That's the only thing that hurts Dalvin Cook. As a player and as a talent and as a fantasy prospect, he's well earned his right to be in that top tier based on what he's produced. But you're always going to get with him this thought of, is he going to be around in the end of the season? Because if he is, he's a league winner. And that's why, for me, on a board, I'd always go with Alvin Kamara, not just because he finished above him, but you'll just bake a lot more safety. Now, you know, there's what happens if Taysom Hill gets the job over slightly. But the guy doesn't bust. You know, again, he only busted once. He played 15 games. He had 9 solid games, 5 MVP games. But he won you a championship in week 16 if you had him. And, you know, I think with him, and if Jameis is the starter there, I'd feel very comfortable taking Alvin Kamara at 2. Behind Christian McCaffrey. I really would. I'd have no problem taking Alvin Kamara, because you can bake in 80-plus receptions. You can bake in what he does. But if someone went in and said, I'm going to take Dalvin Cook at 2, at 3, at 4, I'd have absolutely no problem with your personal thought process towards that and your tolerance for risk for that. I personally wouldn't do it, but he's a top 5 fantasy player, top 4 even. Make the case between him and Saquon. And then you've got Derrick Henry, who is the Russian champ 2 years in a row. And, you know, he doesn't catch passes. That's the only thing that goes against him. But his rushing numbers are so good and so consistent. He is the safest running back prospect up there. Played 16 games again, averaged over 20 points in a half-point PPR league. He doesn't catch the ball. And towards the end of the season, he's an absolute league winner. When defenses are at their absolute worst, he just absolutely runs a tear. You know, Derrick Henry for me. So I think for me, you've got 5 running backs at the top of the board in McCaffrey, Saquon, Kamara, Henry, Cook. And you could put Zeke in there. A lot of people probably aren't right now because of what happened last season, but you could put Zeke in that conversation. And I think really, Christian McCaffrey's a tier above, but it's your tolerance to risk for the injury. But I think those other guys, two to five, two to six, you can kind of chop it any which way. And it's down to personal preference. I think those guys are as safe as houses. The only thing that's going to kill them is injury.
Yeah. I think from what I've taken away from the initial look at this is running backs don't tend to play the full 16 games. I mean, of the top 12, only 2 running backs played the full 16 games, and that was Derrick Henry and Kareem Hunt. Obviously, Kareem Hunt is more of a pass-catching back, although he did play as the lead back for a few games when Chubb was injured. So his hit rate, well, being hit, should I say, is a little bit less being the pass-catching back. But then Derrick Henry, all he does is get hit and keeps going. So It's the running backs not playing. Like you say, Dalvin Cook now has those 2 years where him and Derrick Henry are almost the polar opposite of each other when it comes to the running back position, in how Derrick Henry's season finishes strong, Cook's normally starts strong. And I wonder, over the last 2 seasons, if there was a point at which the Derrick Henry owner would have sort of taken Dalvin Cook off your hands in a sort of switcheroo, if you could have pulled that off at the precise time in both seasons to maximize your running back for the start and end of the season.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think what we know is we know who are the good running backs in this league are from an elite perspective. And I don't think you need this data to kind of tell you it. It just sort of validates it. What is interesting to me is this next tier of running backs. So this is we're going from 4 down to 9, right? So we're going David Montgomery, Aaron Jones, Jonathan Taylor, James Robinson, Josh Jacobs, Nick Chubb, right? Now, I tell you right now, of these six backs, the one that is going off the board next in almost every league I've seen this offseason is Jonathan Taylor. That's where Jonathan Taylor is going off the board. I want to share with you. So I'm going to park nearly everyone to one side. I'm going to talk about just two players right now. So I'm going to talk about David Montgomery and Jonathan Taylor, and I'm going to tell you why these guys, for me, have the potential to be the two most overdrafted players in fantasy football this year. Although with David Montgomery's current price, I'm not so sure I can even say that. But I'm going to talk about why I think Jonathan Taylor is going to be the most overdrafted player in fantasy football this year. And I'm going to do this by comparing him and David Montgomery. Because actually, when you do a comparison on the two, their results are extremely similar. Extremely similar. So let's first of all take the raw data in that they both played 15 games. David Montgomery finished at 237.8 points. Jonathan Taylor finished 234.8 points. So the difference was exactly 3 points between them. David Montgomery had two more MVP games than Jonathan Taylor. Jonathan Taylor had three more solid games. David Montgomery busted once more than Jonathan Taylor. Now, what's interesting is both of these guys at the midseason point weren't particularly great. But from week 12 or week 13 onwards, I'm going to tell you now, from week 13 onwards in the season, so that's 13 through 17, the last five games, Jonathan Taylor was the running back one, David Montgomery was the running back two, Derrick Henry was the running back three, Alvin Kamara running back four, right? So you think that, you think the last five games, well, these guys were absolutely incredible. Now, if any of you were really keenly tuned into last season, I kind of predicted that David Montgomery was going to be one of the best running backs for the fantasy football playoffs. And actually, if you did fantasy football playoffs, David Montgomery over those 2 weeks would have been the running back two behind Alvin Kamara, who had that 50-something point game. So, you know, when you look at that, you think, wow, okay, how did you predict that? I looked at his matchups, if you remember me saying, and I said that David Montgomery had the softest run-in probably any running back is ever going to have in the fantasy football playoffs. This was also true for Jonathan Taylor. So let's talk about David Montgomery. So David Montgomery's last five games, he had four MVP weeks. So four of his five came in the last five games. He got these against Houston, who were the 32nd ranked offense. So the easiest defense to score fantasy points on. He had it against Detroit, who were the second easiest defense to score on. The Green Bay Packers, who were the fifth easiest. And the Minnesota Vikings, who were the sixth easiest. He also had in that span the Jags, who were the third easiest. But he didn't get... He got 19.1, so he just missed it by 2 points. So his last five games, he had four MVP weeks of 21 points. That's the MVP mark. It was 21 points or over. And the fifth game, which wasn't an MVP week, was 19.1.
It's pretty good.
So, yeah, which is amazing. And you look at that numbers, and if you didn't do the science behind the numbers, you look at it and think, wow, David Montgomery's really turned the corner. But actually, in his five games, he played, you know, five of the six weakest defenses.
Yeah.
So actually, it's not all that impressive. But people know this. So this is common knowledge that people know this, that David Montgomery is a guy who can beat up on really bad run defenses, but he struggles against good teams. Against the good teams, he actually had a very good game against Tampa. All things considered, he got 15.4 half PPR points. Atlanta, 6.4 points. Indianapolis, 9.2 points. Rams, 9.4 points. Saints, 11.5 points. When you compare that to someone like Dalvin Cook, he's getting about half the points on average. It was only Tampa that he put in a good performance. So that is the you know, we know this about David Montgomery, but what people don't seem to realise is that Jonathan Taylor is effectively, just from a fantasy perspective, I'm not talking about style, I'm not talking about ability, I'm talking about situation and fantasy points, is pretty much identical. Jonathan Taylor had three MVP weeks, and they were against Houston, who, as I'd already mentioned, were the easiest and gave up the most fantasy points to running backs. He had the Jaguars, who were the third easiest, and the Raiders, who were the fourth easiest. And that's where he got his MVP points against. So when he faced top 12 defenses, which he only did twice, he actually didn't do too badly against Pittsburgh, which was one of those other games in that run. He got 19.4 points. And against Cleveland, he got 14. So it shows that he's a slightly different caliber, but both do as well against good defenses or better runs from a fantasy points perspective. They also both have a scat back. David Montgomery didn't have last season, but will have Tyreek Cohen this year. Jonathan Taylor has Nyheim Hines. Nyheim Hines was the RB 20 last season, who is impacting what Jonathan Taylor is going to do. And they now also re-signed Marlon Mack, who was injured.
Yeah, I was just going to say, looking at this list, all the players who finished there or thereabouts in the top 10 have, apart from Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, obviously, who are on the same side, the team, and we know about them as a unit, between 4 and 10, there are players now who have finished on this list who have got question marks because of either players coming back, players re-signed, or players bought in.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd caveat that slightly and say that Aaron Jones I'm not overly worried about. He will have AJ Dillon, but he anymore, so he could in theory see potentially more opportunity for his, and he's been paid, so there's an investment in him. So I would say Aaron Jones' situation is slightly better. James Robinson, I'm not overly worried about Carlos Hyde. He might take a bit of the work, but I wouldn't be overly worried about James Robinson at this stage. Josh Jacobs' situation's got a heck of a lot worse, because he's got Kenyon Drake, who finished the RB14.
Well, Kenyon Drake's situation's got incredibly worse, too.
It's got incredibly worse as a result. Basically, Josh Jacobs isn't trusted in the passing game. And Josh Jacobs really had three phenomenal games. He busted seven times. He was the only one of these top nine running backs who busted sort of more than five times. And he busted nearly half the time. So Josh Jacobs was an absolute nightmare for fantasy last season. My point is that Jonathan Taylor, just at this point, given the fact that he's going to be in with two other backs, with a coach in Frank Reich who is not going to give him the ball 75% of the time, he's not going to get to elite tier running back. And on top of this, he's only really he can beat up on bad teams. He's had okay games against good teams, but he's also had some bad games in there as well. So I just, for me, you know, this year, everyone went running back heavy early. In 2020, it was running back, I think, was 9 or 10 of the top 12 picks in a standard 1QB league. And actually, I think now you need to pivot towards these elite wide receivers. And I still think the first 5 or 6 picks warrant being running back. In fact, I think more than ever, because these guys are continually developing at such a high level, but there also is such a scarcity in them. You know, these, you know, Alvin Kamara, Derek Henry, Dalvin Cook. Alvin Kamara finished nearly 100 points. He finished 99.5 points ahead of David Montgomery in fourth. We saw this last year with Christian McCaffrey. He finished like over 100 points over the guy in third. Like, when you get one of these elite running backs, they are gold. They will win you leagues. The David Montgomery's, Jonathan Taylor's, you know, they put in a really good shift. But if you're taking Jonathan Taylor in the first round and David Montgomery's available in the third or fourth round, in the essence of fantasy, they're almost essentially the same player. And I don't need people to come at me and say that talent-wise they're not, because I 100% agree that Jonathan Taylor is a great running back from a talent perspective. But, you know, for me, taking Montgomery, you know, I'm in this, we're doing an expert draft every month. Jonathan Taylor went at the 1.05. David Montgomery went at the 4.02.
If you took their names away, if you took players' names away and drafted with just numbers, and I'm not saying like an ADP number or last year's points, because stuff changes, situations change. But if you created your own sort of numbers and stuff as if we've got in front of us, and you drafted with those numbers as opposed to names, you would have a much better draft outcome, because you would be taking players at better value than you would if you drafted Jonathan Taylor, because he's now going to be the next guy at the 105, rather than, I mean, if you think you at 1-6, let's just say Davante Adams went at 1-6, I don't know, but if you take Davante Adams at the 1-6 and then David Montgomery at the 4-5 or whatever you just said, compared to Jonathan Taylor at the 1-5, and then I'm trying to think of a wide receiver in the fourth round that's going to be nowhere near the same combination as if you had Adams and Montgomery. It just, that's way rich for me.
And this is my point. In other drafts, I'm mostly seeing him go on sort of the end of the first round. I don't buy it. I'd rather have Austin Eckler around later. Aaron Jones is going later. These are guys who I'd much rather have than Jonathan Taylor, because the path to them being successful for me is much easier. You know, people are buying. And here's the funny thing is, and I'm not calling anyone out specifically, but people who are looking at Jonathan Taylor as the next coming of an elite running back are also the people that understand that David Montgomery is not. But they're, you know, on paper, they're essentially, I think they're essentially the same. I think, you know, they're not. And I'm sure Taylor has more upside than David Montgomery. But I don't think it's three rounds worth of up, is my point. And I think Jonathan Taylor is really at risk of being the most overdrafted player. I'd much rather have Aaron Jones. I'd much rather have Nick Chubb. I'd much rather have James Robinson. I certainly don't want Josh Jacobs based on that current situation. I'd much rather have Ezekiel Elliott.
You'd rather have Antonio Gibson.
This is where we're starting to get interesting, right? Because this is where the talent starts to drop. I really like Antonio Gibson. And Antonio Gibson came on strong towards the end, and he did it against better defenses as well. The question mark around Antonio Gibson, now we've got Fitz there, is as the quarterback, is just how much work is he going to get? Are Washington going to be leading in enough games to really utilize Antonio Gibson to take him to the next level? He's not going to have a lot of competition. Yeah, I mean, I really like Antonio Gibson. I think he's on the fringes of the RB1 conversation, but I think he's someone that you can definitely consider. And then you do get this massive drop off. So we're looking at this second tier just to round off the top 10, you know, Nick Chubb was 9. He played 12 games. That's why he was 9. He would have shot right up the board had he played a couple more games. Kareem Hunt was 10. He's definitely the secondary back. That's been proven. He got a boost because Nick Chubb missed 4 games. Zeke Elliott, I think it's an outlier. I think he jumps up. I don't think he's... I wouldn't say he's... it's hard to say if he is on that group or the tail end of that group, but for me, I'd be taking him over Montgomery, Jones, Taylor for sure. I wouldn't be as worried about his performance. I think you can see why it went wrong. Now we're getting into dicey territory, right? So now we're going through these 13 to 24, and I'll list them first. Melvin Gordon was 13th. Kenyon Drake was 14th. Mike Davis was 15th. Rojo was 16th. Chris Carson was 17th. DeAndre Swift was 18th. David Johnson, 19th. Naheem Hines, already mentioned, was 20th. J.K. Dobbins, 21st. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 22nd. Miles Sanders, 23rd. J.D. McKissick, 24th. Now, let's deal with the three players that played the least amount of games, which was Carson, Johnson, and Sanders. They all played 12 games each. Carson is re-signed. His position is pretty good. Pretty healthy average, 14 points a game. It would have vaulted him into an RB1 position if he played more games. He always does have a bit of an injury problem. But on the whole, I think he's a pretty safe running back too. As a whole, I think you draft him as a running back too. I think you can buy him at an RB2 price. I think you get him, and it's not a big problem. Then you've got David Johnson. His situation's a nightmare because now he's got Ingram and Philip Lindsay there. I don't actually know what his situation is going to be going forward. But
it's such a weird one because they paid him as well.
Yeah, but then they've restructured his contract and he's taking less money now. So
they paid him, and then they bought in two other backs, regardless of the restructure. It's just a nightmare, like you say.
I think you know, David Johnson last year won MVP games, 7 solid games, 4 bust games, says that he did all right. A low end RB2. Miles Sanders for me is the one that I look at, think, you know, I was well out on him last year, said he's overpriced because of his end of season. People were taking him at the tail end of the second, beginning of the third round, and it was too much. And he finishes the RB23, and it's not just because of his 12 games. It was also because he was in a situation that just didn't play to his strengths. I think that changes in Philadelphia with a new coaching staff. There isn't a lot of competition for him there as of yet. They might draft some. We can wait and see. But right now, he's got a pretty clear opportunity to put some big numbers up. So he's someone I think you can buy low, because I think he's gone from being overpriced to underpriced in the year. I think now you could probably get him in that third, fourth round, and I quite like that price if you can get him. I think he's someone that could. He's better than 23rd. I think you can get him as a solid mid-range to high-end RB2. But so those three are interesting. But then everyone in here for me is just guys. They're just outside this. There's no real. Everyone's going to look at Dobbins and say, well, you know, there's no Ingram there, but you know, the fact that Lamar rushes the ball so much, it's going to cap Dobbins' ceiling. You know, he could potentially get more, but again, I can't see a path to him being an RB1, so I would draft him very carefully. You know, he had 5 bust games. J.K. Dobbins had 7 bust games. I think they could probably push up slightly, but I'm a bit concerned. Clyde Edwards-Helaire just didn't do it, did he? 0 MVP. He's the only guy on this list of 24 players with no MVP games. He had 8 solid games and 5 5 bus games, and he played 13 games, and he just was someone who just didn't deliver. And I'm not saying it's talent, but he had a lot of opportunities at the goal line to score touchdowns and didn't. So I don't think he's going to be overpriced this year. I think he falls into that group at that sort of fourth round range, maybe mid third. You know, I like some of the rookies coming in. I think some of the rookies you can get will do potentially a better job depending on landing spot, like Harris and Williams, for example. But like Melvin Gordon is the perfect example of someone who got healthy and just played enough to finish at the RB13 position.
Mm.
I don't think he's someone that, even though the opportunity's cleared up for him, for Lindsay there, I don't think I'd be rushing out to draft Melvin Gordon at any stretch. Mike Davis is interesting now. He's in Atlanta. He signed for Atlanta today. If they don't add anyone else in the draft, he could be a very interesting buy. Ronald Jones, not for me. I think Bucks draft a running back and bring another one in anyway. I think he kind of hit his ceiling. And a lot of this was massaged with big runs. Where else are we at? Naheem Hines is a scat back. I like these guys. Tariq Cohen, Naheem Hines, you can get in the 8th, 9th, 10th round. I think they're absolute steals. These are the sorts of guys that win you championships because they're just solid guys who put up points. I know Naheem Hines busted 11 times. It's hard to say that, but he's the sort of guy with an average of 10 points per game that just win because he plays every week.
Yeah.
He's someone that would just chip in on the roster. You just need a 5-week flex and you'll do a great job. JD McKissick's another one like that. Exactly the same.
They're almost, when you get running backs in a committee, sort of like JD McKissick, although Antonio Gibson is good, you've got these Naheem Hines and the Tariq Cohens, mm-hmm. who people sleep on every year and you get them late and we know what their workload and role is, whereas someone in a running back sort of like Clyde Edwards-Helaire or J.K. Dobbins, you almost... When there's 2 or 3 guys and it's a clear split, the outlier for me here is Cleveland with Chubb and Hunt being so far up the list. But you almost want the pass catching back as opposed to the running back in a committee because we know what they're going to do. Whereas the running back, it can be shut down in such a way that they're not going to be effective for fantasy as much as the pass catching back will be. And I know Jonathan Taylor is good and... But now Mac's back. I mean, they don't re-sign Mac for no reason. They don't have an allegiance to him. And to give him a contract shows me they're going to use him a little. And that little will take off of Taylor. So I'm not saying don't draft Jonathan Taylor and draft what's his name? Naheem Hines. I'm just saying when you know a pass catching back, we know what their role is. People draft them too late for me.
Absolutely. These guys, for me, I don't know why you draft Ronald Jones in the fifth, sixth round when you can buy Naheem Hines in the eighth or ninth. Like, to me, they're not much off being the same player. Certainly this year, they didn't produce, you know, they produced fairly similar stats. Mm. I don't see this, you know, I don't understand why you'd want a guy like Mike Davis. I understand investing in at that stage if he's going to be what looks like could be the one in Atlanta. Yeah, of course. But like Kenyon Drake is going to see a massive fall. I can't see the point of drafting Kenyon Drake in the fifth or sixth round.
Yeah.
Jacob staying in the second round. But give me these guys. If Melvin Gordon's a fifth round pick and Naheem Hines is an eighth round pick, give me Naheem Hines. I know I'm giving up a few points here and there, but actually, I don't think I'm giving up that much. Same with these guys. Like, you know, Naheem Hines is in this range of field with Swift and Johnson and Dobbins and Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Like, he's right bang in the middle of that, those guys. For me, looking at this data, Miles Sanders is the ultimate buy low right now. And maybe even Mike Davis will be an ultimate buy low. I think Chris Carson is a sleeper in terms of where he'll go off the board to what you're going to pay for. We haven't even included in this Joe Mixon. And I don't know where you put Joe Mixon in here. It's a difficult situation. I think it's interesting with the running back position. I think if you are drafting at in the top half of the first round, you're taking running back. If you're drafting in the back end of the first round, you see a couple of these guys go off the board, like a Nick Chubb, like an Aaron. People are going to panic and start taking these guys like Jonathan Taylor, or guys are just going to fall in love with Jonathan Taylor and take him early anyway. And that's where your game plan is going to start to unravel, because you start to chase these guys. Mm. And actually, you don't need to panic. Take the best available wide receiver. Take an Adams, take a Hill. They'll be there. And take the best available wide receiver, and then go in round two and get someone like an Eckler who will be getting an injury discount on, who will produce just fine. Get like a Kareem Hunt and Antonio Gibson in those rounds, because you're going to get much better positional value off that than what you're going to get with Jonathan Taylor easily being the most overdrafted player this year. And I think people need to heed that warning, because yes, him and Montgomery have produced decent figures, absolutely so. But the back end RB1s, that's their ceiling. You're paying absolute ceiling prices for these guys. Well, for Taylor, not for Montgomery. Montgomery, you're still paying an absolute discount on. Like, I don't understand how there's near enough three rounds worth of difference between these guys.
It makes
no sense for me.
No, especially when those three rounds are the top rounds where you know what you're getting pretty much production-wise from the top wide receivers or a Travis Kelce. I mean, if you were to tell me that you could get... This is hearsay, really, but imagine if you could draft Devontae Adams, Travis Kelce, or Austin Eckler, and then come back round and get a wide receiver in the third, and then draft David Montgomery in the fourth, that's a dream situation for me. You've got Eckler and Robin Montgomery, plus one of the best wide receivers in the game, and then whoever you take in the third there, it's dreamland.
Absolutely. If you're drafting at the tail end of the first, so I've been doing a lot of mocks at 10, and I've been walking away from drafts with Tyreek Hill, getting Tyreek Hill, Austin Eckler, Keenan Allen, David Montgomery as my opening four picks.
I think you'll struggle to combo any four picks better than that at that point in the draft, just because of the value of David Montgomery at four.
Yeah, I completely agree. Again, it just to me makes a lot of sense. I know what I'm buying with David Montgomery. I'm not buying a running back one. I'm buying a high-end RB2 with low-end RB1 upside, but I know what he's going to produce. And I know he's going to take a dip next year because he's going to have Tyreek Cohen, but he's going to be just as good as a lot of other guys in that round. So I'm quite happy to do that and take Keenan Allen, who I know is safe with Herbert. Tyreek Hill is as safe as anything. Austin Eckler, you know. And I've got a nice little stack there. If I end up getting Herbert in like the seventh round, I've got a nice little Chargers offensive stack of Herbert, Allen, and Eckler.
Oof.
I mean, that could be a really nice little stack to fire you up through the season.
Could be.
So I think that's the key. I think, you know, we've touched a bit on strategy here. There's five or six guys who are your true bell cow production running back guys, and those guys should go off the board 1-6. And then you should be fluid from there on. But you shouldn't shut the door on running back, and you shouldn't chase running back in the back end of that draft. In the back half of the first round, you can get some real value off some guys there.
Mm. Yeah. I think my article I wrote last year where I said if I'm drafting from 12, I want to go wide receiver. I think there is almost some merit to that right now as well, with who you can get. Maybe you do need to take a running back in the second. But if the value isn't there and you can get two stud wide receivers, I don't think I'd be opposed to it right now.
No. And I think you kind of have to look at what is available and be fluid. That's what we talk about all the time. But just don't buy this hype that Jonathan Taylor is an elite fantasy football running back. Just don't buy that hype, because there's nothing in this that suggests that he is going to get A, the touches, and B, the production. So just be really careful, temper first. Just let go. Let him go. Don't shoehorn yourself into thinking you have to take the guy because you're going to miss out on him. Just be prepared to let him go and take someone else.
Be happy to miss on him. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, listen, if you get into the tail end of the second round, it's a different conversation. It's a completely different conversation. But he's not going that late. He's going tail end of the first. I'd rather take Kelsey. I'd rather take Kelsey than Jonathan Taylor.
Yes, Murph. Yes.
I wouldn't, but I'm just saying I would rather that more. But you get the point. But anyway, I think we've laboured this on long enough. But I hope people have understood this a little bit. And yeah, the data's solid. And like it just makes a lot of sense when you lay it out, and people will be able to see it and go through it for themselves and see what we're talking about in more detail.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Well, Rush Nation, that was the running backs. We've done tight ends eventually. Quarterbacks are covered. It's just my favourite group to go, the wide receivers. I would say we'll do it next week, but like Murph said, we're fluid and we keep moving about, so it will come. I'm just not 100% sure when.
Yeah, it deserves its own show, so that's why I wanted to get tight ends and running backs together.
Yep, agree. Rush Nation, don't forget, we are still running our Ricky Williams jersey competition. All you have to do is donate £2 to our charity. Unique, the pinned tweet at the top of our Twitter page is where you need to enter. And don't add gift aid, because it is a competition and it is for charity. We would absolutely love a few more entries, Murph, because we're getting there, but we're still a few shy of where we want to be.
Yeah, definitely.
Right, Rush Nation, until next week, don't forget, keep rushing.